Potato Pod with Todd. We ready?
Yeah, we're ready, buddy.
Sure, yeah, it's like having the sticks.
That's right, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I've worked in professional television.
Well, this is pretty professional for me.
So very professional.
We just had to turn the barbecue gas off. Yeah. It actually reminds me, when I was in high school, this just made me think of it. When I was in high school, I used to sit in science class, and we had a table like this, and there were these faucets that weren't attached to anything. And I was so bored, I would just sit there and start spinning those. And never thought about it, but every day when I left that class, I had this huge headache. And then one day, my teacher came around, and he's like, who the hell turned the gas on? And all day long, I just kept fiddling with the gas. Yeah. Yeah, it was fun.
Good, you almost blew up the school.
Yeah.
Nice, good work.
Yeah, well, you know.
It's tough to be a teen. It is, you have so much energy, and nobody wants you around. And you have no money. No. And you're too young to get into anything, and you just, you know, and you have time, and that's why you get in trouble, because you just have nothing else to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's almost like being a comedian, really.
That's the thing about the pandemic. Watching everybody kill a day like a comedian was fun. It's like, we are uniquely built for this situation. Yeah. I can kill a day like nobody's business.
Man, so how you doing? So you come to L.A., or you come to, this is Las Vegas. You live in L.A. You yes. come to Vegas. A lot.
Yeah.
Both at the, you do the LA Comedy Club. You said this week's been going pretty well.
Yeah, this week's been fun. You know, I've been running my hour because I'm taping a new special next month.
Yeah.
And so I'm running that hour all week long. And it's great because it's like, it's rare to be able to do it 7 times in a row where I can mess with the pieces and move them around and, you know, try it in various lineups. Because there's an order that I have in my, it still isn't set in stone. I'm still messing with the pieces.
Yeah.
So, but it's going to be electric. I got another standing ovation last night. So
that's awesome.
It's been tearing down the house.
That's great. And then when this posts, then tomorrow night, you'll be at the Dirty at
12:30. Yes, that's right. That's right.
Stash Makes Cash, is that yours?
It's just my little slogan.
I like it.
So, yeah, just for fun.
Yeah.
And it was funny because when I started saying that, I literally started making a lot more money in television. It was one of those accidental manifestations. Yeah, I just manifested. It was like, Stash Makes Cash. Next thing you know, I was booking all these jobs. So. You know.
And it works perfect for the Halloween costume. I saw the picture on Mario, Instagram. Yeah. The Mario, yeah.
Yeah, it's the go-to. It's the go-to. When you have this face, it's almost mandatory. I mean, I even have to do the joke about it, even though I don't particularly like the joke.
Really? I honestly love that joke. Whenever I'm watching you perform and you're like, everyone like shout out what you want to hear, and everyone always goes Schwarzenegger, I'm always like, I don't want to be the geek here sitting with the comics, but I'm always like, Mario!
Yeah, the Mario. It's such a silly joke, but, and I had to be made, because if I don't do the Mario joke, at some point I'll hear someone in the audience say, it's a me, Mario. Right. You know, like it's such an, and then they think they're so hilarious.
Right.
Like they're the only one that ever put it together. And it's funny with the Geico commercial, because, you know, I'm supposedly doing parkour through this big parking garage and flying through windows and all this.
Supposedly.
And the first comment on YouTube under it on the Geico channel was, now there's Super Mario.
Nice.
Comment one.
Did you go, just out of curiosity, the live action one was a long time ago. This was the animated one. I was going to say, like, if they ever did a live action Mario movie again.
Yeah, they did it with like Bob Hoskins.
Yeah.
Which is like a great British actor. Right. It made zero sense. Like he probably had no idea who Mario was. He's British, not Italian. Like, I mean, the whole thing was just silly why they would do it with Bob Hoskins. I remember seeing, because that was like the 90s or 2000s.
Yeah.
And I just remember seeing it going, Bob Hoskins? That just made no sense.
And then who was the one that did him in the animated film?
Chris Pratt.
And Chris Pratt,
the animated one was really good, though, actually.
That one apparently everybody loved that one. I never saw it, but I heard it was great. It was good.
But the only Mario that really made sense was Captain Lou Albano. In the 90s TV show, because he's actually Italian. He just had to shave off his beard. But I'm going to put this out here right now. If Hollywood makes a live action one, I think they need to.
Listen, I'm up for it. And I'm available. So call my agent.
There we go.
I remember these guys were always funny.
And you know what's funny is I'm not a gamer.
Yeah.
So I'm aware of Mario. I used to play Donkey Kong, like the original game.
Like on Atari?
Donkey Kong. Yeah. Like
on a standing.
Yeah, with the barrels, jumping the barrels. Back when it wasn't about Mario.
It really was.
It was about Donkey Kong.
Yeah.
And then there was Donkey Kong Jr. And then after that, it became Mario Brothers and Mario Kart and all the Marios. That's when the Mario thing took off. But at that point, I'd kind of gotten out of my game phase and I didn't really care.
Was Mario a spinoff of Donkey Kong? Because yes. I know the character looked exactly like. I thought they just didn't have the
technology. No, Mario was the little guy that was trying to kill Donkey Kong.
That's so weird.
Yeah.
Like, let's take this guy.
Let's take a plumber and have him save a princess from a giant ape that we call a donkey. Nothing about it made sense.
It's so true. Created by Shigeru Miyamoto. I'm sure I'm pronouncing that right. As part of a failed attempt to replace Nintendo's 1980 game Radar Scope.
There you go. The original unnamed the Japanese version of Donkey Kong. So.
Yeah.
But it was called Jumpman in English instructions. And then it translated to Little Mario in the sales brochure. They changed it to. So, yeah. Came from old school Donkey Kong.
Yeah, Donkey Kong. I loved Donkey Kong, actually. Yeah. And Donkey Kong Jr. Those were the first two games. And so, but then after that, I kind of fell out of love with video. To me, even as a kid, I felt like I was wasting time and money playing video games.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It just wasn't, I was like, what are we achieving here?
Yeah.
Like, I got really good at Pac-Man. You know, you would memorize the tech, you know, the you had a thing to win all the stages.
Right, right.
You know, you would play it so much that you would develop, you know, you had a system for it. And after a while, I was like, the fuck did I just learn? Like, I just spent, you know, months mastering this game for what?
Yeah.
You know? And I was just like, this seems really stupid. And that was pretty much the end of it for me in video games.
That was the thing. Like, I'm old enough. I started with Atari. Yeah. And I loved it.
Yeah.
And then when we got our first Nintendo, loved it.
Yeah.
And then I got a Super Nintendo. Great. And then after that, I was like, this is enough. Like,
yeah.
The graphics of Super Nintendo, I still remember, like, Donkey Kong Country and just being like, wow, it looks like snow. And it's just like, it's so, but then they start going, like, insane. And I'm like you, like, every once in a while, I think, like, it would be good to get, like, a gaming console just to have something to do. And then I'm like, why would I waste all of, like, what brain energy I still have?
Right.
Why am I going to waste that on learning?
On mastering games. And it's funny because a friend of mine, Brian Monarch, is a huge gamer. And he's like, come on, I want to teach you. Come on, you got to learn games. I'm like, I was like, I told him, I said, one day I'll be in the hospital for a very long time. And you can bring the gaming system, and that's when I will play video games. And then I had a heart attack, and I bought a video game system because I had to sit there on the couch for like 6 weeks while I recovered. And so my wife bought me a PlayStation 2, and we plugged it in. I played three games and was like, yeah, no, not for me. We returned the fucking PlayStation.
It is crazy how many, like, streamers make money from gaming now and stuff, though. It has changed a lot now.
Yeah, we
have. No, absolutely. People love watching other people play video games.
Yeah.
Wow.
Which trips me the fuck out.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm like, what? Now we're not even engaging the game. We're just watching other people play.
Right.
Wow. Boy, we really, no one does lazy like Americans. We really, just when you think we can't get any lazier. And I've seen it. My nephew will sit there and watch YouTube, you know, channels of people, of gamers.
Yeah.
And like, look at him. He's playing this game. He's so great at it. But if you think about it fundamentally, what's the difference between them watching someone play that game and me watching someone play football?
That's true, yeah.
I mean, I'm not playing football, but I'm fully invested in watching this guy play football.
Yeah.
You know?
It's true, yeah.
So at the end of the day, it's like esports.
Yeah.
You know, people like why would you, it's a huge thing, but if you're not familiar with it, you don't even realize it exists.
Yeah.
And yet this stuff is selling out arenas. These big esports, they have an esports arena here in Las Vegas.
Yep.
And it's like, and again, fundamentally, what's the difference? Yeah. What's the difference between watching them play a game, even though it's a digital game, versus me watching guys play, you know, a sports game?
Yeah.
I mean, fundamentally, it's kind of the same thing. So, you kind of don't have a leg to stand on, even if you don't understand it.
And it's interesting because a lot of times it combines with, like, the podcast thing. Just listening to people. Like, podcast really is just listening to two people have a conversation.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, a long-form conversation. And we saw that, again, and this isn't political, but we just saw a couple weeks ago with AOC and Tim Walz were playing, like, games on Twitch. Like, they were
streaming
them playing the game
so
that they can reach, like, a different demographic. I mean, it's really interesting the way that that stuff like that evolved. Because when I first heard of esports, I was like, what are these fucking geeks doing?
Yeah, totally. Same thing. And then I was like, I guess, I mean, what's the difference, really?
What is the difference? It's entertainment.
Yeah.
And now me and my wife, we have a slot video channel, which is another popular thing here in Vegas, where you just film the slot game as you're playing it. And you talk over it.
Okay.
And like, no, listen, and people, by the thousands, people watch these.
Oh, I don't doubt it. Listen, slot tournaments to me are the dumbest fucking thing I've ever seen in my life. There's no skill. No, there's no skill. Mm-hmm. You're just, who's the luckiest?
Right. Yeah.
Who's the luckiest? Which machine decided that person was the luckiest?
Yeah.
That's it. They're just... That's it.
Yeah.
I'm like, this is the stupidest shit I've ever seen in my fucking life.
You know who plays slots like he's in a slot tournament all the time? Or I don't know if all the time, but when I played slots with him before, is Butch Bradley.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. We were in Atlantic City and we sat down and he's like, let me just try $20. And he's like, and I'm like, dude,
that, makes no sense. But, you know, he stopped drinking, so you got to do something. I'll give him a pay. Well, you got to stop drinking. I guess you got to take up slots. I don't fucking know.
Man, what do you have a game here in Vegas? Are you a slot guy? Are you a table guy? Are you a no gamble guy?
Mostly sports betting.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Football, especially it's football season. That's one of the reasons I love to come here, so I can gamble. You know, on all the games I love. I do the fantasy football show myself on YouTube called Fantasy Football: Harsh Reality, and I just love fantasy football. And then you know you accumulate all this knowledge about all the matchups, and so I might as well use it for some sports betting too. And I've actually had a pretty good week with the sports betting until last night, and I kind of blew it. You know what? I didn't take my own advice. I bet against what I was like, I feel real good about the Jets -2. And in fact, I had it as one of my locks of the week. Then I downgraded it to a roll the dice. And then I got up there and I was like, I can't fucking bet on the Jets. I just can't do it. You know, even though on paper, but the Jets have on paper supposed to be great all season.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
They're fucking terrible. And I'm like, even though the Texans were completely depleted, had one weapon, I was like, they're going to find a way to lose. I couldn't do it. So I just put 10 on the Texans. Money line, of course, lost that.
Yeah.
So, you know, and a couple of little props. Dude, I bet the over-under for Rodgers running was 0.5 yard. I bet the over.
0.5 yard? That's a little funny.
And he ran for 15 yards. A holding call pulled it back. He finished the game with -1 yard. I was like, you fucker. You couldn't lean forward for a yard the whole game? So.
Do you have a team?
I do. Cowboys, big time.
Okay.
Yes, love
you,
the Cowboys.
You and Ernst.
Me and Ernst, yeah. And Jason Wolgamuth, too. It's weird the way the Jersey guys, and I don't know if it's like you grow up in Jersey, you don't really want to go for the New York teams.
Right.
And so a lot of them just somehow became Cowboys fans. Because you know, New Jersey's like one giant suburb between New York and Philadelphia.
Right, right.
You know, so so some of them, they don't really want to be Philly fans. They don't really want to be New York fans. So a lot of them just adopted the Cowboys. So it's kind of an unusual thing.
Yeah.
I grew up in Dallas. So, I mean, that was, and during, you know, I was in my 20s in the 90s. So during the heyday, it was the greatest thing ever. So,
yeah,
you know, so I'm a huge Cowboys fan. But, I mean, it's a terrible franchise. It's fucking horrible. But you're either a fan or you're not. You know what I mean? You don't just throw the team away because, you know, you're just like, yeah, that's the way it goes. You know? Every team has dysfunction. So, I mean, Kansas City wasn't a winner before Mahomes. They sucked for decades. People forget the Patriots were the doormat of the league before Brady and Belichick.
Yep. Yeah.
You know, for like 60 years, they were garbage. Then they hit this fucking 20-year pocket of amazing. So, I mean, teams do this, and, you know, you just stick with your team. And I love the Cowboys.
I was on a show. I do Brett and Butch's show sometimes on Sundays at Jimmy Kimmel's, and the Cowboys were playing a couple of weeks ago, and when Brett went up on stage, they were up, and then they went down after, like, while he was on stage.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I joked to Butch, I was like, when I go out there to bring him off, I'm going to tell him the score. And he's like, dude, don't. He's like, he'll punch you in the face. And then, but when I went to go bring him off, I was like, I go walking out on stage, we shake hands, and the first thing he says is, what's the score? And
right.
Like, well, I got to tell him.
When I was on stage on Wednesday night, I guess it was. So Tuesday, I had a great parlay that I won for the over. I took the over in the World Series. And the Yankees because it was game four. And I was like, they have to win this one. And if the only way they can do it is if the bats come alive and then it turns into a foot race. And that's exactly what happened. I felt like a genius. Then the next day, I'm like, roll it over, let it ride. And I put it on the Dodgers to finish out the series. And of course, so then I'm sitting there watching the game. And of course, the Yankees go up 5-0. And I'm like, this is my fault. This is because I let it ride. Okay, so then I'm watching the game at the club before I go on stage. And the Dodgers came all the way back. And now it's a very exciting game. And the guy that I was standing next to, he was rooting for the Yankees, right? So I go in the room, and I'm on stage, and all of a sudden from the lobby, I hear, fuck! And I'm like, yes! Daddy just won $80.
Are you going to put money on the Tyson Paul fight?
Fuck no. Do I bet on professional wrestling? I don't bet on fixed events.
Did you see the thing where the Patriots let the Dodgers use their private jet back to LA after winning the World Series, like, as their congratulations? Basically, it's like a fuck you to New York.
Totally. Yeah, totally. That's awesome.
That's funny.
That's hilarious.
That was great.
So I got a fun topic we can dive in here real quick, too. So I thought this was pretty hilarious as well. So there was a pizza restaurant, and they apologized after their dough got contaminated with THC, sent customers to hospital. Jesus. So a bunch of people got pizzas from this place and got very, very high.
Well, as you know, edibles, you know, they take you to a place that is not high. Mm. You're sick.
Yeah.
Like, you're sick. I've felt it. That's why I don't fuck with edibles. I do take gummies, but I'll never go above 10 milligrams.
I don't fuck with edibles. I take gummies.
Gummies to sleep. It's to sleep.
All right.
And they're 10 milligrams. Anything above 10 milligrams, I'm like, get that away from me, Satan. Get that away. One time, this is a true story. So I'm with, who was it? I think it was Josh Wolf. So Josh Wolf and I are at the Laugh Factory, and he pulls out this brownie, and he goes, you want some of this weed brownie? And I'm like, fuck yeah, I want some of that weed brownie. And he breaks it out. He goes, no, this is 100 milligram weed brownie, so be very careful. And I'm like, so we just each take a little piece, just a little piece. But in the process, another little piece broke off. And I'm looking at it, and Josh is looking at me, looking at the piece. And he goes, don't do it. And of course, I'm the type of person, all you have to do is tell me not to do something, and I'm totally going to do
right.
it. So I think all comedians are kind of wired that way, like, don't? What about now? You know. So I took it, and, you know, I was fine, you know, but I have a Mexican metabolism, which is very slow. And so, like, for the first, you know, so I did the show, we're hanging out, everything seemed fine. Then I go home, and I'm laying in bed, and I got too high in my dream. Like, I'll never forget when I hit that point. So I'm asleep, and in my dream, I'm talking to somebody, and all of a sudden, and the person I'm speaking to in the dream looks at me and goes, are you okay? You're fucked up, man. And I'm like, I think this weed's too strong. And I wake up. And the room is just spinning, and I'm just like holding on to the earth for dear life. And I wake my wife up, which, you know, now she thinks there's an actual medical emergency.
Right.
Because I'm like, babe, wake up. She goes, what's wrong? And I'm like, I think I'm too high. And she's like, go fuck. She's like, if you think you're going to puke, go sleep in the bathroom. Which I did. I got up and I went and I slept next to the toilet. Because I was like, I'm going to puke. Slow down the earth. This sucks. This is so bad. Oh, my God.
It's a different high for sure. But, yeah, they were right by, like, a weed product facility. So what happened is, I guess, it leaked into, like, the water or something. So it got into the dough.
And it's weird, too. The kitchen shares with Turtle Crossing Cannabis.
Yeah.
So it did cross over. It was just very slow.
And they share the kitchen? That makes zero sense.
They show, like, the building that they're in. Yeah, so, but they're, like, right next to each other. So I guess they share, or something.
It does say Famous Yeti's Pizza in a building that also has a shared kitchen. What do you expect?
There you go. That's on you, then.
Yeah. By the way, a cannabis place and a pizza place in the same building makes perfect sense.
Totally.
Yeah.
Without question. Well, they have that in Los Angeles now, the lounges where you can smoke and eat.
Oh, really?
And it's regular. It's not infused food. You just sit there and actually have a decent meal and smoke while you do it. And what's weird is they have drinking, but the drinking is outside and the weed is inside. That's... It makes zero sense.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Nothing about their setup makes sense. And you cannot drink and smoke at the same time. You have to drink out there and smoke in there, but you cannot smoke outside and you can't drink inside. So you can't do both unless you stand in the doorway, which is exactly what I did.
That's wild.
The one place I ever got to really sit at a bar and smoke and drink at the same time was in Amsterdam. There was one of the bars had a special room for it that had like a fan, you know, like to take the smoke out. And so they were like, yeah, you could order your drink here and you can take it in there and you can smoke and drink in there. And I was like, wow, finally.
Right.
I finally get to do what I do all day at home somewhere else.
Yeah. And then at the same time, shove a banana up a woman's... And you're good to go.
Of course. That's all they do in Amsterdam.
Boy, I stuttered over that. Made it sound real creepy.
So great. Did a real nice job with that.
Has he ever said that?
You put the banana in
you got to open it up first. Yeah,
what you don't want to do is peel the banana. It makes a peeled banana is a lot harder to work with. You just mash it. Just mashing a banana.
And some girls prefer it when it's black, so you gotta like wait until it's really,
really ripe.
And then it just
oh god, that'd be the worst. Mm. The worst banana sauce ever.
I'm hungry now.
For fish sticks and bananas.
You want to hit one more topic, or do you want to play another real or fake? I have another real.
Oh,
or
you
fake
got another real or fake? Let's
yeah, you want to play a game? Fake.
All right.
Cool. So real or fake? So these actually
are
say.
Are we done yet? Yeah. I'll be honest. Those of you who are watching this, this is the day after Halloween, okay? I was out last night in Vegas in full Mario costume for Halloween. I am not in great condition right now. And this studio is like in Utah. And I'm like, you guys ever heard of Zoom? Believe it or not, we've conquered these distances with Zoom now. So, but here we are. Yes, let's real or fake.
So it says if you could tell whether these are real or fake or made up, you might low key be a genius. So let's see. So we'll go through and we'll see if you guys got.
What if
you're
high key a genius already?
So the first one: dogs have about 3 times the taste buds as cats do.
I'm gonna say that's true.
I don't care.
All right, Todd. Boom. Nailed it. True.
Hey.
All right, next one.
It's interesting how much they lick their own asshole. I find that's...
Hot water can freeze faster than cold water.
Oh, that's true, actually.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Bang. Nailed it. Yeah. Surprising, ooh, right? The Mempob effect? No clue if that's how you say that, but sure.
I think Kobe started that.
Sunsets on Mars are green.
I'm going to say...
I say false.
There you go. Yeah, nailed it. So good job. They're actually blue. It's a pretty cool picture, actually.
So far, we're low-key geniuses.
Yeah. You are. You guys are geniuses. Snakes do not have eyelids.
True.
That's true?
It is true. They do not have eyelids. Transparent. Boom. Fingerprints deposit on paper don't last longer than a couple years.
False.
I'm going to say false on that one.
All right.
You say true.
You said true. You got wrong. It was false.
I was going to say, I think it can survive for like thousands of years.
40 years or more.
Yeah.
Paper. Yeah.
Well, yeah, because they found ancient scrolls that had, you know, fingerprints and shit on them. So.
Which is pretty crazy. Squirrels sweat through their eyes.
Who doesn't, though? Right? I mean,
yeah.
Have you ever seen me eat a pizza?
Especially one with THC.
So, like, oh, yeah. Yeah, sweating through my eyes all day. I'm going to go with, that seems false. I'm going to say false.
I'm saying true just because it seems weird to make up.
It is false. It seemed like bullshit.
They sweat through their feet, actually.
Hot.
Potatoes used to be
used
for...
That's got to be its own niche on Pornhub.
Squirrel feet sweat.
Potatoes used to be used for jack-o'-lanterns.
True.
What size potato are you making into a jack-o'-lantern?
I would assume a sweet potato.
Okay. Oh. Sure, I'll go true on that, too.
It is true. Yeah. They used to use that in turnips.
That was on our Halloween quiz last
year. It
was.
And lastly, in Canada, a cat once ran for mayor.
True.
Yeah, I'm going to say that's true in Canada.
It is true.
Yeah. I was going to say, because I think he actually got elected, didn't he?
His name was Tuxedo Stan and ran in Halifax, Nova Scotia, about stray cat. I don't know if he won, but that is hilarious, wow. Yeah.
A cat running for office in Canada, that is Trudeau.
There you go. Look at you. 7 out of 8. You scored better than 95% of all quiz takers.
You there guys you are go. Geniuses. Well, here's the thing. I actually did used to work on a trivia game show, so.
Did you really? What, yeah. What game?
Funny You Should Ask, that show. It's actually called Funny You Should Ask. I know. I forgot that every time you say that, you have to specify the name of the show. It's Funny You Should Ask. Because it sounds like a preposition. Yeah. Funny You Should Ask.
Right on.
Yeah.
How long were you on that for?
About, I think I worked on it for like 2 years, something like that. Yeah.
Do you
I worked on about 140 episodes.
Okay, so quick question. This might be stupid, but for between stand-up, acting and like doing something like working on a game show, which do you prefer the most?
It's a tie between acting and stand up. They're both those are my passions. I mean, my first passion was acting, and then stand up. You know, it just seemed like a natural progression for me as a performer. So
yeah,
so I love them both tremendously.
Yeah,
yeah, that's a tie. Everything else, I mean, I do love coaching stand up too. You know, I originally did it just to make money. Cause you know, it's like if I didn't have a gig or anything, I'd just throw up a workshop and make some money.
Yeah.
You know, and I gave out great information. I was the best teacher. I still am, you know, better than all these other teachers. They suck. So, cause most of them were never good stand-ups. Right. You know, most of the time, and that's the problem with coaching stand-up. It has such a bad, kind of stigma to it because it's usually done by the worst comic at the club. And that was one of the reasons I started teaching. I hated that these horrible comics were teaching. I was like, what do you have to teach? You're fucking terrible at this.
Yeah.
You know? I'm like, this needs to be taught. It's the only art form taught by people who never mastered the craft. It was bizarre.
It's like a history professor who dropped out of high school.
Right. You're like, what are you doing? Like, Bruce Lee taught, you know, Kung Fu. I mean, that's, right. You know, masters should teach, and no one good ever teaches stand-up. So I started teaching. And that became a real passion, though. Seeing the way I really changed these young comics' lives and really gave them such... I basically was telling them everything I wish someone had told me starting out, you know? And it's really just given so many of them such a better base for starting with their expectations as well as what it's going to take from them and how long and how strong the material really has to be. I mean, I tell them a lot of very harsh truths that a lot of other comedy teachers will not tell them because they don't know.
Yeah.
Number one. And number two is, you know, a lot of the rest of them are just trying to build them up and rah, rah, and you're so great and, you know, you should just take another class. Like, they're selling classes. I don't fucking care. So I'm telling them a lot of very harsh truths about the stand-up game that ultimately will aid them in their process because they know what they're really getting into.
That makes sense.
I've also had people quit stand-up after taking my workshop.
Which is a good thing.
Which I mean, is, like, because they realize how big the mountain is, and then they're like, you know what, yeah, this isn't what I meant to. I didn't realize there was all this that goes into it.
I could see, like, I you're one of the people that I would definitely see being good at that. Because you have, like, a... When you're on stage, you have such a loose flow. Like, obviously, it's one of those things where, like, I watch you perform and I'm like, it feels like you are coming up with shit off the top of your head. Obviously, you
and a lot of times I am.
No, that's true. But the mixture between that, like the improv and the crowd work and the material, it's like it's so flawless that it does just feel like you just walked up on stage and picked up a mic. You know what I mean? Like,
I mean, thank you. And I would, you know, that is what it's supposed to feel like.
Yeah.
You know, it's supposed to feel like a conversation. And so I really have gone out of my way, especially mixing the improvs with the material. But the material, I really focused on the writing. And that's why, like, I have a class that's online on Teachable called Mastering Stand-Up. And it's the joke writing class. It's all the major joke writing components as well as performance and delivery and stuff like that. Because, you know, people look at my act and they think I'm just bombastic. And I'm like, no. This is built on very solid joke writing and routine structures.
Yeah.
You know, it's all structured very purposefully. Even though it seems like I'm just up there being a wild man.
Yeah.
It's not. Every bit of that has been structured to function like absolutely destruction, you know, crusher material. And that isn't the easiest thing in the world to do. That takes focus. That takes attention.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's like, it's that thing where, like, if you want to come off as chaotic and if you want to come off as just fly by the seat of your ass, as they say, you have to have that structure first. You have to have the base.
You do. You really do. And everyone wants to avoid having developed the base first. But I always compare it to Picasso, because if you look at what, you know, Picasso, everyone knows what he's known for. And it seems like he just ignored all of the base. But that's not the truth. If you look at Picasso's earliest works, it was very traditional. He was a total traditionalist. He mastered basic, you know, portraiture painting.
Right.
And then went into the obscure, into the stuff that made zero sense.
It's you like know? You have to know the rules before you can break them.
Yeah. Absolutely. Everyone just wants to break them. It's like, well, but you're not, it's no good. You don't know what you're doing.
Right.
You know? And so, you know, that's always kind of one example that I use before he became abstract. He mastered traditional, you know, painting.
Yeah.
So, and then went abstract. So, and I feel like that's kind of what stand-up is. You really do have to master the fundamentals before you can do anything else with them, you know?
Right. How long would you say it usually takes, like a normal, like if you track your students after they're gone?
Not really. Like, no. I stay in touch with them, but I mean, some of them, and a lot of them become really close friends, actually. It's so funny. I have this huge community of comics I've taught that I'm friends with. The average time has decreased dramatically because of YouTube, because the ability to ingest stand-up, so much of it is learned by watching.
Right.
And that used to be, you used to have to go and hang out at the club. You needed to be at the club and watching the guys do it night in and night out and kind of learning what they're doing and seeing how it works. Now, like Madison Sinclair, who I think is just a marvelous writer, she, and not one of my students, I'm not, you know, I can take no credit for it, but I worked with her on the game show, and I just always thought she was so funny. And she is, she's brilliant. And she told me that the way she learned, what happened to her story was, I guess she was like, she had some kind of major illness when she was in high school, and she had like stay home for like months. And I guess she spent those months just watching the Laugh Factory channel on YouTube, just consuming every single clip they put out.
Right.
So she consumed hundreds and hundreds of clips and kind of began to get an idea of how you write punchlines from that. She basically taught herself how to do stand-up from watching these clips. Heretofore, you could never do that. You would see a stand-up for 5 minutes on a late-night show on the weekends. Like, you just didn't have this massive amount of consumable on-demand stand-up.
Yeah.
So now, what used to take 10 years can be done in 3 to 4.
Yeah.
If you consume that much, but you also, the consuming, it's one thing. It's the commitment to the practice that is really the difference. You can't just do stand-up once every week or two.
Right.
You know, you have to do it every single day.
Yeah.
And that's really the difference. It's not about just consuming it and seeing how it works. It's about how does it work for you when you get up there. And the only way to do that is by doing it every day.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, because I found like when I started, I had already had, like, I had 18 years of experience as a pro wrestler. So right. I'd already entertained,
right,
live
right.
entertainment, stuff like that. So no stage fright, that type of stuff. So I had that part. Then I'd been like that. I'd been watching so much stand-up, and I was obsessed with comedy podcasts where people were just breaking down the art itself. So I did feel like I had a bit of a boost, but then there's the whole finding yourself on stage. What are you going to talk about? How are you going to make your shit funny and stuff like that? So it's always a... It's like such an interesting art that I think sometimes people that aren't involved don't give it enough credit as an art.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, again, because in its final version, it looks simple. It's like crowd work.
Right.
In its perfected version, it looks like you're just getting up there and talking shit.
Yeah.
But that is not the case. You're creating punchlines.
Yeah.
And if you're not, then you're just being an asshole.
Yeah.
And so what you have is a bunch of young comics getting up there and just being an asshole and hoping to catch that clip, you know? And consequently just ruining shows all over the place. And it's like, well, that's one way to not get invited back. I hope you got your clip, you know? Especially since the fishing style, the call and response, where you're sitting there interviewing the audience, okay, this is fine if you know what to do. But for the rest of the audience, you know, if you're going to sit there, if you have a 7-minute set and you're spending five of it to, you know, asking questions to the audience, fishing around for something that might be, I mean, you're asking them to do the comedy at that
right.
point.
Yeah.
You're waiting for them to say something that you'd be like, you know, that's not good crowd work.
Right.
That's crap.
Yeah.
You know, and it's boring for the rest of the audience. That's what you never see in these clips, is how much of the time the rest of the audience is bored out of their fucking mind while you're continuing this line of questioning
right.
until you get to anything that's funny. Now, the funny part makes the clip, but the rest of it is not there, so you don't see that a lot of times they're just boring the shit out of the audience for 7 minutes.
Right.
So.
I swear to God, I was on a show a couple of weeks ago. I was the headliner, and the guy that came up right before me, he told me before he went up on stage, like literally like as he's walking by, he's like, hey, check this out because I'm going to do some crowd work. And that's sort of my thing. And he's like walking up and I wanted to be like, dude, don't do crowd work right before, please.
Yeah.
But he gets up on stage and his crowd work, I swear to God, at one point was, you sir, what's your favorite movie? And the guy said, like, I don't know, Forrest Gump. And he's like, oh, that's not, all right, I haven't seen it. What about you? What's your favorite movie? And then, and it was like every time someone answered something, he's like, oh, maybe I should see more movies before I do this bit. Anyway, I was hoping someone would say, and it's like, that's not crowd work. What are you doing? I almost
this is exactly
stage.
What I'm talking about. Because they all want that clip, because they all think they're one clip away from being Matt Rife.
Exactly.
And the reality is, Matt Rife had been doing that for a decade.
Yeah.
Okay, this
was he started opening for Ralphie Mayne, like with
right.
The Smash
been,
Brothers.
And let me
shit.
Tell you something. I thought Matt was going to be huge a long time ago.
Yeah.
Like, I'm surprised because he was so good looking and he was on Wildin' Out.
Yeah.
And I thought he was going to just, he'd be the next Dane Cook. That's how far back I've known this kid.
Yeah.
And so I thought he was going to be the next Dane Cook, you know, right around 2011, 2012. I was like, this kid's going to be, he's so good looking. He's the next one. And then it didn't happen until, you know, 2021, 22. And so when it happened, I was like, I'm surprised that took as long as it did, to be perfectly honest,
right.
You know, because let's be honest, he does good crowd work. He is a good comedian. I really have always liked Matt. But, I didn't feel like the clip blew up because of anything extraordinary he did.
Right.
You know, it just was a great clip. And also, he's incredibly good looking and girls... You know, if you can impress girls, they share videos the most, they do yep. the most comments, they do the most, if you can get them sharing your shit, and that's what happened. Girl, it's all your girls going, have you seen Matt Rife? Have you seen Matt Rife? And then the video blew up.
He's like a reverse comedian, because most comedy fans, like even for podcasts, are dudes. His fan base is like all women.
All
yeah. It's insane.
And then they bring their boyfriends or whatever. Yeah. That's crazy.
You know what's hilarious? So I did a show with him at the Improv, and this is right when he blew up. So he was the biggest thing at this point. Right when it was... super huge. And so we're doing the show at the Improv and I never get showing up and I'm like, what are all these hot chicks? It's been a long time since I saw a lot of hot chicks in a stand-up comedy audience. It used to happen a lot, you know, in the 90s and the 2000s, then it really died out.
Right.
And then now, and so I was, now it really became kind of, you know, an older person's art form. And then the Matt Rife thing, all of a sudden there were these young hot chicks that the audience get. But the thing is, they'd all consumed it in these little clips. They'd never been to a real club. And then he gets up there and starts saying, making a lot, all these racial jokes that they couldn't believe he was right. saying. They were like, oh my God, what? Like, they were freaked out.
Yeah, I got in trouble.
And I'm like, welcome to real comedy, children. I hate to tell you, but this is what we've been doing for 50 years of comedy clubs.
Right.
Not this 30-second clip you saw. That's just a little sliver of what really goes down in this room. You know?
Yeah.
But on the upside, if that gets them back into comedy and brings them back to comedy clubs, fuck yeah, I'm into it.
Absolutely.
I'm all for it.
Have you noticed that since crowd work clips have become so popular, besides other comics just trying it all the time, have you noticed like audiences expecting that more or like...
Without question.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
To the point where they come ready to talk.
Right.
And if you don't engage them, they'll give you the old, I'm helping you. And it's like, no, you're not. Shut the fuck up. You know, so there is that, and because of it, they're also now prepared with lies.
Yeah.
You know, they have a prepared little, I'm going to tell them this. Oh, I'm going to say that. You know, and so you wind up in this, like, little, like, fuckery.
They don't get that the comedy is from the truth. Like,
right.
You tell the truth, I'll spin it into a joke.
Right. That's, and instead, they want to, they're like, I'm going to tell them this. Yeah. You know, like,
I lost my virginity to a dachshund hound that came down from an alien ship.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I'm a proctologist, but I only use three fingers. Like, I mean, they're just ready with bullshit now. And so half of this isn't even real anymore, you know?
Yeah.
And the way I teach, because I teach crowd work as well. And in fact, I was teaching it way before. I've been teaching this, you know, since like 2010. I've been teaching crowd work. And the way that I teach it is to, because I teach that version of crowd work is a very advanced version of crowd work. This is once you really get your feet wet, know how to create the punchlines, know how to do it. And I say specifically, I'm like, there's nothing worse than watching a comedian get a piece of information and can't do anything with it.
Right.
And I'm like, now you just look like a shitty comedian.
Yep.
And that's what happens when you start asking them questions. Yep. You better be able to do something with that. And if you're not, so you want to kind of build up to that, to where you get used to interacting with the crowd and creating punchlines. So it's all about creating instant punchlines and learning how to do that first. And then you can progress to engaging the audience.
That's why I always think it's a good idea. Like, as a, going back again to the, like, the general rules or whatever, like the basics. Leave that for the headliner. For, you know what I mean?
Right,
like,
and that's the other thing. You always should ask the headliner if it's okay if you do the crowd work, because he may want to do the crowd work. And, you know, in fact, there's two guys I know right now where the guy, he's been working with this feature for a long time, but he's been doing all crowd work lately. And then he comes out to do crowd work, and the crowd work has already been done.
Yeah, you know? I've seen that where they're like, oh, no, he already said he's from Duluth. Or
whatever. Exactly. Everything's already been exposed. Everyone's got nicknames already. Everyone's become this and that. And so he's like, fuck, I can't. So he's had to stop working with this guy, and they're very good friends, but he had to stop working with him because he was making it too hard for him to do his own act.
Yeah.
It's really, crowd work isn't something, it is headliner's choice.
Right.
So, and if you'd want to do it, just be sure and ask the headliner if you're okay with it doing it.
Yeah.
Because otherwise the headliner's in the back of the room telling the booker, don't ever bring this guy back.
Yeah. That's what I tell him all the time. Always make sure before you go up before me, he's not a comedian. I'll never let him fucking open.
I'm just a fan.
I think it's time now, don't you think, to to go off the top rope.
Okay. The turnbuckle.
Yeah, that's this. So what this is just, these are questions that he presented. These are just like spitfire. I have no idea what it is.
Hot.
Yeah.
Hot topics.
Hot toddy.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, yeah. Hot potato.
That's right. Sweet toddy. All right, here we go. Let's. This one's wrinkled a lot. I'm going to try one of the newer ones because you said you put some.
There's some new ones in there, yep.
So here we go.
I'm glad you did all that mixing to just throw it away. You spent so much time making sure it's mixed with, like, it pulls one that goes, not that one. Like, what a way. The whole suspension of disbelief has been shattered.
Do you have a bucket list, and tell us one thing you'd do?
I don't. Because I live my dreams. So there's very few things that I haven't, that I really like want to do that I haven't done.
Really?
So, I mean, there are some things that are still like, okay, so everybody wants to try skydiving, right?
Right.
We went to do skydiving, but they only had, you know, you got to have somebody strapped to you. Well, they only had one guy, and me and my buddy wanted to jump at the same time. And they were like, okay, well, the other guy's coming. We just got to wait for him to show up, and then you can both go up together. So we're sitting there waiting and waiting and waiting, and this guy hasn't shown up. He's like, oh, they had an emergency, blah, blah, blah. And then we had to go do our show. So at an important point, we had to stop and get a refund and just leave to go to do the show. So we never got to do the skydiving. So that is still out there.
Yeah.
But I definitely tried to do it.
Yeah. Was the emergency that he fell out of a plane?
I hope so. But other than that, yeah, no. I mean, everybody has the same one. I mean, there are places you want to go and stuff like that. And you know, I mean, but pretty much anything that I've really wanted to do in life, I've done.
That's awesome. That's a great thing to be able to say. I didn't realize he was standing up.
Yeah.
What's the weirdest gift you've ever received?
A pack of like 48 AAA batteries.
Okay, so who gave you that?
Okay, it was a White Elephant gift party.
Okay.
So, in context, it makes more sense. But I was like, ah, oh, yeah, it's heavy. Yeah, yeah. I'm like, ooh. And triple A. Like, that's such a
weird one, yeah.
Like, double A, that's a great gift. Absolutely. Triple A, you fucking with me, dog. Yeah. Like, yeah. Can you think of one thing you put triple A batteries in? Like, no. It's the most, one of the more useless battery side. Like, double A is what it's about.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So they get this giant thing of, I think I still have them. I think I still have a whole tray of triple A batteries in my house.
It's great. When you're 90 years old, you'd be like, oh, I do have.
Totally. Anytime I've ever needed one, I'm like, I got one for you. Hold on. I'm Captain AAA battery now.
I thought you were going to say giant cigar. Because no. I will never forget that night. We were doing the smoke show, cigar smoke yeah. show. And you're not exactly a cigar smoker.
Oh, I hate them.
So hate them. Everyone, the entire audience is smoking cigars. You start making fun. Brad, the owner, comes out with this. I mean, it's a fucking gigantic yeah. cigar that he legitimately sells.
Yeah.
And the things you did with that cigar. Yeah. On
I was like, I've always wanted to know what it's like to suck a black cock. Like, you guys realize you all look like you're sucking dick.
Yeah, it's the best.
It's very, you know, it's very phallic. The whole process. I'm like, I've seen this video before.
It's so true.
So, yeah. So they brought me one, and I did a lot of phallic stuff with it. It was fun.
And then who did you give it to the next night that actually smoked it?
I don't remember.
I want to say it was Jose, but I don't think it was. Was it Nabil? It might have been Nabil.
Might have been Nabil. He'll smoke anything.
He loves a big,
that dirty animal. He'll smoke anything.
Do you think you would be friends with a clone of yourself?
No. In fact, I would probably do everything I could to ruin his life. Like, get the fuck out of here. Only one of me. That's the thing. You know, here's the funny thing about being an actor. You know, you think you're a fairly individual person till you go to an audition for your type. And I know I'm a type. I am very, there are a lot of short, round, dark-haired, you know, Italian, Jewish, Mexican-looking dudes.
Yeah.
And but you put us all in one room together, and they'll be like, well, I can just throw a rock, pick a guy. We're all exactly the fucking, like, we're all just slightly different. He's slightly fatter. He's got a little more hair. But we're all the exact same. Nothing makes you feel like less of an individual than an audition.
The six-foot guy comes in, and you're like, fuck off.
Well, the six-foot guy comes in, and he's clearly not reading for our role. I mean, he's the guy we're reading with.
If you had to change your first name, what would you change it to?
Probably David, my middle name. I'd probably just go to the middle name. I've never liked Greg, and I've never felt like a Greg. It's one of those things where I just got so far down the road with it that I was like, I'm fucking Greg.
Yeah.
But I did consider going by David for a while, and I just never, I don't know.
David Wilson.
I've been Greg Wilson for so long. I'm a Mexican, but it's the whitest name on planet Earth.
My dad's name is Greg, so that's why it's funny.
See? Perfectly
white guy. And you got to admit, the videos of Greg name, when people are like, what's the worst name for guy, Greg. Fucking hate Gregs. Like, there are no positive Greg videos on TikTok. It's all, don't be a fucking Greg. Greg's a fucking man. So, it doesn't have tremendous connotation, but that's the other thing. Being a Mexican, it was great as a kid growing up in Texas because I was like an undercover Mexican. Nobody knew that I was Mexican because I don't talk like this. And I don't, you know, my cousins do, my family does, but we didn't. We lived in, you know, in the suburbs and went to very, very white high schools. And my name is Greg Wilson, so no one ever, you know, no one ever spoke to me in Spanish. Everyone assumed I was white.
Yeah.
And the name is because of adoption. My dad was adopted by his stepfather. So he went from Calleros to Wilson.
Oh, okay.
And that's how we became Wilsons.
What was the last name before?
Calleros.
Man, if you were Greg Calleros.
If I was David Calleros. But the expectation, David Calleros can speak perfect Spanish.
Yeah.
That's a bar I cannot. I'd get in there like, yes, I am David Calleros, and I don't speak Spanish.
It must be weird having such a white name.
It is. I've always felt, well, but you are.
I mean, that's true.
Whereas I'm not. I mean, we're the Wilson clan, but we're part of the Calleros y Romero family. So it's weird. We're this weird Wilson section, you know, but we're all very Mexican. So.
Okay, last one here.
Did you stir it enough, though? Did you stir it?
See.
You didn't like that one? Oh, that one died.
I don't know. Yeah, that one's... okay. Oh, no, this would be a good one for you, actually, I think. What's a funny habit you do at home while no one's watching?
I brush my teeth with my eyes closed. I'm telling you.
That is unique.
Okay, right.
So not even you're watching.
Nobody's watching.
Yeah.
But I'm telling you, if you want to make sure your teeth are clean, brush your teeth with your eyes closed. I'm telling you, it's a completely different experience. You will really feel each tooth. Like you like when your eyes are open, you just see yourself doing it.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
You're like, brush. But when your eyes are closed, you literally are just feeling yourself brushing your teeth, and you do a much more thorough job.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Which
and I have great teeth. I have great teeth. Because I've always focused on brushing my teeth because I knew my family was never going to take me to a dentist. So I was like, I need to have perfect teeth. So I always just really focused on brushing my teeth. And so if you do it with your eyes closed, I'm telling you, try brushing your teeth with your eyes closed. It's a game changer.
Are you sure it's not some sort of like hidden homophobia or something? You just don't want to see yourself doing this? Or
no, I'm fine with that.
Wow. Well, I'm 100% will be doing that.
Yeah, I'll give it a try.
Just give it a try. Oh, just yeah. See. I mean, it's not like you're going to do it every time after that, but sometimes you'll be like, oh, yeah, oh, yeah.
You're going with feel more than watching.
You're going with feel. Sense, yeah. You're going with feel because you really can't see your teeth. You only see the front.
That's true, yeah.
But if you close your eyes, you really feel where you're brushing on your teeth.
It'd be crazy if next week I show up and I just got bright white teeth.
Yeah.
Yeah, fantastic.
Like veneers. Like,
yeah. Wow, what happened? Close my eyes, dude. Changed the game.
Do you have any dates you want to plug?
Dirty at 12:30, obviously, coming up right after this comes out, we'll be out there, and then I don't remember what the, but follow me on, everything gets posted on Instagram, so everything, at Greg Romero Wilson, and of course, look for my special that'll be coming out at the beginning of next year, called Everything is a Lie.
Hell yeah, and then awesome. Where can people find your class? You said you have online
classes. Oh yeah, go either. To, you can either, well, go to, it's thecomedyinstitute.teachable.com. So it's on Teachable. Or you can just go to teachable.com and search for the Comedy Institute or Mastering Stand-Up. That's the main class. And you could go on there and take the class.
Nice.
So
that's awesome. Dude, thank you so much for coming. I've been wanting to have you on since literally since we started. You're one of my favorite comics to watch. And so
well, I'm glad I finally got it out of the way. So... So you never have to make this trek to Utah again, like, with a hangover. Look at me, I'm sweating. I'm not gonna, like, let me get this over with me. Dying up here. Thank God for the fan. At first, I almost gonna tell you, like, don't worry about the fan. That has been saving my fucking life this whole podcast.
Glad
every time it comes my way, I'm like, ugh. Such a mess.
Thanks so much for coming on, man.
No problem.
Like, comment, subscribe.
Later.